And now it's time for another edition of the Political Junkie.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Senator, you're no Jack Kennedy.
But I'm the decider. Ah!
The dominoes just keep falling as states fight to see which will be first to cast a vote in the presidential primaries. How does December sound? And forget about retirement. Two former senators may be making comebacks, maybe even a run for the White House. The Democrats played nice, relatively speaking, in their debate over the weekend, and Republicans have another big set of shoes to fill in next year's congressional elections in the Midwest. Ken Rudin joins us here in Studio 3A. He's NPR's political editor, our political junkie. If you have questions about the ever earlier primary schedule or the contenders' political comeback, debate, or the rest of the week's news, give us a call, 800-989-8255, or zap us an email, talk@npr.org. And Ken, nice to have you on the program.
Hi,
as
Neil.
Always. Michigan could decide today to push up their primaries to January 15th. And if that happens, is that going to have even more of a domino effect than we're seeing already?
January 15th, 2007, I
yes.
understand. Yes, exactly. It's actually insane. And some this is going to have to stop at some point, because If Michigan moves up to January 15th, New Hampshire's state law says it has to be a week before anybody else. So New Hampshire would move from, which is now scheduled January 22nd, to January 8th. Iowa's law says that it should be 8 days before New Hampshire, before the first. So does that mean Iowa's going to have it on New Year's Eve, on New Year's Day? It's going to be December 2007. Each state trying to be more and more relevant is making this whole process more and more insane each day, and it's just getting out of control.
Well, no less a prominent Democrat than Senator Carl Levin, the chairman of the Armed Services Committee, says, look, Michigan has a right to the attention of all of the presidential candidates. We want those people to know what an industrial state, a diverse state is like. Iowa and New Hampshire have had it their way too long.
I know. Carl Levin has been saying this for 20 years. He's been very, very jealous of the New Hampshire's first, and of course, with good understanding, given the fact that so much attention has been played on Iowa and New Hampshire, but also so much money has been dumped into those states, TV revenues, candidate stays, things like that, big boost for the state's economy. But the problem with a state like Michigan going first is that the lure of Iowa and New Hampshire is that you don't have to be a multi-gazillionaire to compete in small state primaries. In Michigan, with the big cities, with the expensive TV markets, you have to spend a lot of money to go into a state like Michigan. Of course, the argument for Michigan is that it has union support, it has African-American support, it has urban support, you know, urban pockets of influence, which the early states don't have. But again, the excitement, the interest, the lure of Iowa, New Hampshire, that you don't have to be a multi-millionaire to compete there.
And the Democratic National Committee is expected to meet, I think, this weekend to try to enforce some discipline. And they have said already, look, if you move your primaries earlier, you're going to lose delegates. We're not going to seat these people at the election. We're going to ban presidential candidates from campaigning in your states. And nobody believes them.
Well, yeah, exactly. Three words, lots of luck. First of all, even if they take away some delegates from the conventions don't even mean anything anymore, given the fact that the nominations are sewn up well in advance. It's not even a ratifying convention because the candidates basically will have the nominations sewn up perhaps by February of this year. But again, you know, Michigan has gone, wants to go first. Florida has moved theirs up to January 22nd, and they face some sanctions from the DNC and the RNC. So I think, but a lot of states feel, look, the sanctions are worth it. We've been bypassed for too long. We need to be relevant. We need to have the influence. And if Iowa and New Hampshire can be up front, so can we. And that's why they've all moved up so close.
Mm-hmm. Now, three long-serving and powerful Republicans have announced in recent days that they don't plan to run again. All of them, as it happens, from the Midwest. Dennis Hastert, this former Speaker of the House, Ray LaHood, both from Illinois, and now Deborah Price, the 8-term congresswoman from Ohio's 15th district. She joins us now on the line from her home in Columbus, Ohio. And Congresswoman Price, nice to have you on the program today.
Well, thank you for having me.
And why did you decide now to announce that you plan not to run again?
Well, mine was a very, very personal decision. And, you know, people use family all the time. But my situation, I have a 5-year-old that's beginning to kindergarten. I have really blessed to have two aging parents, but they aren't doing that well. And, you know, I can't do it all on the weekends anymore or from out of town, and I really need to be home. And, you know, 15 years is a good long haul. And public scrutiny is a very good thing. It makes our government work, but 15 years of it's plenty, and I look forward to returning to the ranks of a private citizen Jane Q. Public, and I look forward to enjoying that a lot.
There have been some suggestions. You had a tough race last time around, a narrowly defeated Mary Jo Kilroy, and that you know maybe you didn't look forward to another bruising contest in a year that does not look promising for Republicans.
Well, I think the Democrats, all their stars lined up perfectly last year. It was a perfect storm for Republicans. We were right in the middle of it. I survived that. I don't have any qualms about the fact that I could have been reelected, but you're absolutely right. The bruising, ugly nature of it is something that I don't think anybody looks forward to anymore. I think I could have won, but it's a strain not only on the candidate, but when you have a five-year-old and she's getting comments in her preschool about her mommy, you know, it starts to make you think if it's really worth it.
I guess people can understand that. Nevertheless, if you would, some would say your decision would almost cede that seat, not just to the Democratic Party, but to your bitter rival, Mary Jo Kilroy.
Well, I don't think that that's going to happen. I'll do everything I can to see that that doesn't happen. Once again, that was the perfect storm. Mary Jo Kilroy peaked early in that election. She didn't do herself any favors with the public. The way she behaved with the recount and saying the election was stolen, that type of thing. I think that if we have the right candidate, and we're working on that right now, she'll see the same fate she did against me.
Ken?
Congresswoman Price, I understand that you're talking about that you have a five-year-old daughter, but you had a three-year-old daughter when you ran for re-election in 2006. If the Republican Party had stayed in the majority, if it retained its majority, or if the Republican Party wasn't on such a defensive over the war in Iraq, might your decision be different?
No, it wouldn't at all, because some people who know me better know that in my past I lost a daughter to cancer. She was 9 years old. I was serving in Congress at the time, and I lost a good part of her growing up because I was in Washington. And I vowed that this wouldn't happen to me. So it's time for me to come home. It's just time for me to come home.
Do you see more big name retirements in the Republican Party given the state of the Republican Party right now?
I don't think so. You know, I don't think we're in that much state of disrepair. I think what we're looking and waiting for is a leader. You know, we're waiting for our candidate to emerge at the top of the ticket. That will totally rejuvenate morale in our party. And I think that people are just waiting to see who that person might be. And they'll give extra electricity to the party and to races all across the country. And I think that it's just a matter of time. The people that are making these decisions now are making them for very private, personal reasons, not necessarily political ones.
And do you have any suggestions as to who that that next leader of the Republican Party might ought to be?
Well, none that I care to share right now. Thank you.
And I guess we shouldn't write your political obituary too quickly. You still have the rest of this term to serve out.
That's right. There's 16 months to go. We have a lot of work still to do, and we're going out with a bang. There's extra motivation when you know you have a short time left, and we still look forward to serving this district strongly and effectively.
Congresswoman Price, good luck to you. Thanks very much for being with us today.
No, it's my pleasure. Thank you.
Deborah Price represents Ohio's 15th district. She joined us today from her home in Columbus. And Ken Rudin, when she leaves, she'll be missed.
Well, you know, she was the fourth-ranking Republican in the House until last term. She was a moderate Republican in a party that has certainly moved to the right over the years. And and I'm just wondering if, given the fact that Hastert was a kind of a moderate and Ray LaHood is a moderate and Deborah Price also leaving, if the face of the Republican Party in the House may be changing as well.
Let's get some callers in on the conversation. 800-989-8255, and we'll begin with Drew. Drew's calling from Portland, Oregon.
Hi, thanks very much for having me on.
Sure.
I wanted to ask Ken, it seems like the states that are all rushing to move their primaries earlier and earlier may be very counterproductive for them in that they'll all get in each other's way, and it might in fact be the later states, the ones that may be waiting all the way till March or April, that will end up having more influence if in fact no candidate emerges in January or February. And I wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Well, there is that theory. Those are the buyer's remorse states that if either a decision is made in the early primaries or no decision has been made, if the Democratic primaries is between Obama wins here and Hillary wins here and Edwards wins here and, you know, Rudy Giuliani wins here and Romney wins there. So maybe a second look, these later states might show advantage. But there's other people who feel that what happens in Iowa and New Hampshire could be so overwhelming, such a bandwagon effect that all the states that have these primaries on February 5th, and there are like 20 so far.
Arizona just joined them.
That's right. Arizona's at like the 20th. If they basically endorse what comes out of Iowa and New Hampshire, it's very possible that the battle for the nomination may be over on February 5th, and those later states may be left out, you know, in the cold. Both theories are in play.
Hmm. Do you have a sense as to whether it will be the standard of having one candidate or a couple of candidates emerging from that early round, or whether it might actually be that scattered?
My gut tells me that it may be over by February 5th. But again, if every candidate picks and chooses, let's say Rudy Giuliani doesn't do well in the early Iowa, New Hampshire, but does well in New Jersey, New York, California, then theoretically the nomination battle could last beyond February 5th. My gut at this point tells me it doesn't happen.
Fascinating. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Drew. We're talking with Ken Rudin, our political junkie. You can read his column at npr.org and listen to him every Wednesday right here on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Ken, a little name game in the Republican presidential stakes. We've dropped one Thompson. We await another.
We're still waiting for Fred Thompson. He is so-called testing the waters, and a lot of people are very interested to know what exactly that means, given the fact that he surely sounds like a candidate. He looks like a candidate. He says, you know, I'm coming. But he still hasn't announced yet. There's a rumor that he was going to announce on September 5th, which is 2 days after Labor Day. It's also the day of a Fox TV Republican debate, so he may not even do that as well. He may even push it off to later September. There was a point, I think, at some point where a lot of Republicans were not sure about Mitt Romney, about the other candidates in the field, that he could have made a bigger impact. But the longer Fred Thompson waits, the longer it makes me feel like he's the guy behind the curtain at the Wizard of Oz, that they may not be there.
Oh, and we, of course, Tommy Thompson dropped out of the race after the Iowa straw poll just a little while ago. Warner for Warner in the U.S. Senate in Virginia, maybe?
John Warner, the veteran senator from Virginia, Republican, is 78 years old. He's not raised much money this year. He will announce shortly after Labor Day whether he will run again. The betting in Washington is that he doesn't run, and if he doesn't run, the Democrat former governor Mark Warner, a possible presidential candidate at one point who said he wouldn't run, may be that Senate nominee there. And Democrats are very excited about that seat in Virginia.
And we could go back to having two Kerrys in the United States Senate.
Well, if Chuck Hagel, the Republican from Nebraska, does not run for another term next year, and there's some question about what his plans are, Bob Kerry, the former governor and senator of Nebraska, says that he could conceivably run for that Senate seat. You'd have two Kerrys.
Now president of the New School University in New York. City.
And also he says, though, if Hagel does run again, he'll contribute to his campaign.
I guess a former Democrat, too. Let's get another caller on the line, and this is Mitch. Mitch with us from Des Moines, Iowa.
Well, thank you now. I'm from Des Moines here, and I attended the debate on Sunday morning at Drake University. What really stood out for me is Senator Barack Obama in making the statement that, you know, if we need someone who's going to break out of the political patterns that we've had over the last 20 years. The other candidates tried to grill him in the first 10 or 15 minutes of that debate. But my perception and others there, and I walked in there and decided, but walking out of there, I thought Obama did a fantastic job.
Ken?
I thought Obama did well. This is the first debate I saw that usually after every debate I say to myself, Hillary Clinton didn't do anything to jeopardize her standing as the ostensible front runner for the Democratic Party. But this time, she seemed to be part of the pack. I think Obama did very well. Biden did very well. I think John Edwards did very well. I think everybody else had a good line in it. I we talk about these national polls that shows Hillary with a double-digit lead over any Democrat. But again, Iowa is, you know, known to be have its own make up its own mind. 10 days before the primary in 2004, Howard Dean had a lead, and he wound up finishing third. So polls 5 months out in advance, I think, are a mistake. I think Obama certainly has a shot. The last polls I saw showed it really bunched up among Edwards, Hillary, and Obama in the state
in
of Iowa.
In Iowa. Mitch, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
All right. Let's see if we can go to Gary. Gary's with us from Campbell, California.
Hi, Ken. Yeah, obviously, as you've mentioned before, you know, YouTube has been a big factor or starting to be a big factor. I'm kind of curious what else you see is coming into play online, in the online world. What things have excited you?
Ken?
Well, I guess I just wait for things to, I mean, obviously everybody remembers the macaca moment of George
Interesting
Allen.
Story on Morning Edition today about various people trailing various candidates trying to capture that macaca moment.
They want to repeat that macaca moment. And look, you know, as John McCain has said, look, if you're going to run for president, everything you do is public, and you should be aware that there will always be a camera, an unfriendly camera following you. But again, so far, it just seems to be pretty conventional. Most people are getting most of their information besides the YouTubes of the world. They're getting it from Jon Stewart. And the few of them who are turning out
I don't mean just the negatives, but like, for instance, I don't know if you've seen YouTube just did their YouTube. They just revamped that to make like a matrix of issues in candidates. I just wonder if you've seen that. What do you think of that, for instance?
I have not seen that. I confess. Mm-hmm. I have not seen that.
Ah. Well, you should. It's pretty good.
Luddite Ken Rudin. You have to crank up his computer, rewind the rubber band. Anyway, thanks very much for the call, Gary.
Thank you.
Turn off my 8-track recorder.
Let's see. I guess we're out of time, Ken.
What?
We're out of time already.
I have so much more to say.
I know, but I guess if people want to know what it is, they can go read your column, The Political Junkie, at our website, npr.org. And there's also a podcast that you do with Ron Elving.
It is worth the 15 to 20 minutes every week. believe me, trust me on this.
Ron Elving and Ken Rudin featured on that podcast. You can also find that on our website. He'll be back, of course, here with us next Wednesday as we continue with The Political Junkie. Ken, thanks very much.
Thanks, Neil.
This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Until the end, the old red, white, and blue. I want to grow up to be a politician and take over this beautiful land. And take over this beautiful land.